Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And boy, we're going to be talking about that today on more than one level, because we're going to be dipping back into history. And history, so many times, when you remove its veil, shows us a lot about who and what we are and how we got to be where we are right at this moment. My guest today, Dr. Linda S. Bowlby, she has walked a journey of research that really opened up her life in many ways, but also can open up yours. Her book is Renaissance Woman. Linda, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Donna.
I hope you don't mind me calling you Linda.
Oh, absolutely not.
Linda, you have quite a unique background. You have graduated from the University of the Oklahoma School of Medicine. You, for over 11 years, were involved in pathology and had a residency in the same, worked as a pathologist. And you decided you were going to go into something else. Because of what you did, you wanted to know more about the mind, what you describe as diseased thoughts, and the emotions, how it affected us physically. You've been in Alaska, which I mentioned to you before we went on the air. It's one of my favorite places on the planet. And you've done a lot of work with women. Your book is called Renaissance Woman. What was it that made you go into this wonderful research on history regarding the Renaissance woman? And who is she and what is she?
Well, we are all Renaissance women, and we can claim that. I began I had always heard the phrase Renaissance men, and they were always men that were highly esteemed, sensitive, intelligent, etc. But I'd never heard an equivalent term Renaissance woman, and that, I was puzzled by that. And of course, then I looked to Webster's dictionary and discovered that Renaissance men are defined as men with a wide interest in many areas of expertise, but there was no equivalent term Renaissance woman. And of course, the term Renaissance means rebirth, of course, and the feminine vessel is one of rebirth. And I thought, well, how could we not be called, you know, women today particularly, and now that I look back throughout time, I've had wide interest in many areas of expertise. But I'm also a great art fan, and I would say buff, but I don't want to dig too deep because my history facts may not be as perfect as I would like them, or as thorough as I would like them, rather. There's no such thing as perfection. So I began my search really looking at the art of the Renaissance, because I thought perhaps art could tell the story or help me understand what was it about. And so I started the Renaissance, but then, of course, the Renaissance in Europe, particularly Italy, from the 14th to 17th century A.D., is really a Renaissance of classical Greece, which was around 600 B.C. So I looked to the art of those societies and the social structure, and it was most revealing.
I would say it was. And, Doctor, I'm going to ask you to speak up a little bit louder because you have a soft voice, but I want to be sure that my audience hears you clearly. You started right on the very first portion of your book talking about the archaic period, which was 776 to 479 B.C. And I really loved in your book, The Renaissance Woman, the relationship of art, because it was the survival of that art that really tells quite a story. And even as far back as that period, the male depiction in the art was that of the nude male. There was absolutely no concern about the showing of the male body. However, the women were always closed. And you also had done in your research, and of course any of us that have done any kind of history, I mean even in school we've heard these terms, women in various cultures were often labeled unclean because they had their menses. I recall seeing huts where women would go as soon as their menses start, and they would be separated. They were just considered to be out of the environment for that period of time when they were in their menses. And my goodness, I have to pop forward. I think of even when I was a girl growing up, it was just hush-hush. You just didn't talk about it. I mean, it's just amazing. So when I was reading your book, that women were looked upon as being something that was sort of supernatural, but also that they were to be feared, that this woman's got something here. What in the world did you discover? And that is what kept me totally and completely interested in your book from the very first page until I finished it. Tell us about the archaic and the classical Greek political organization. What was that at the time? What was the government like? What were the attitudes about people?
Well, the government was really a male government of male citizens, and they bred with female citizens, but female citizens had no vote or no rights, nor did, of course, did children. But what I discovered in the society is that it was all about the divinity of the male, and they shared, you know, the male figure was that of a godlike figure, and they tried to portray their own divinity in their explicit sexual exposure in their art, as well as their, you know, the developed physique, the physique of an athlete, the grandest of all a male persona.
Mm-hmm.
And with the women, what was interesting is the women were clothed, and I thought, well, I wondered whether it was due to menstrual taboo. I wondered if it was out of respect for a woman. But really what I found in the Greek history is they didn't have a taboo against menstruation. They had a taboo against women entirely. Women, you know, Aristotle's the misogynist of all times, and his colleagues and that era of time really they really thought women were only there for their use, to procreate and to provide for their comfort, or to provide. Now that was for a wife's duty. Now they were required. They had both. They were very bisexual in their behaviors, but they required frequency once a month at least they had to be sexual with their wife to continue the race and their male line. But and other women were either slaves or just provided their sexual day-to-day needs. And then there were the grand courtesans that were educated and as well as men. Now, the wives and most women were not educated. In fact, the Greek men felt that would be a great liability. It would be giving ammunition to a poisonous snake. I think that's one of the phrases they use. I mean, women were absolutely of no value except for their comfort and what they could give a man.
Right, and they were considered property. When you look at different cultures in the world, and this even existed in the United States, the attitude of the male towards the female, and I think it's historically Irish women are known to be one of the strongest female. Mm-hmm. Of course, they've got a tremendous Celtic background mm-hmm. that had an influence on them historically. But I can recall reading many years ago in China a woman where she was very highly educated, and she had been educated by her father-in-law, and it was a death penalty for a woman to know how to read, to be able to perceive things. And though she ended up having a large family and had a number of girls, and her family was quite wealthy, she made sure that the girls knew a certain amount relative to education. But she told another individual, and it was an American, it is dangerous because if women know this, our whole culture will change. Now, she had been very fortunate, but I thought the dichotomy here. Here is someone And this was in China. This was back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, not really all that long ago.
Yeah.
And here is this, a woman saying, well, I was educated, but my life is in danger because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet because of being educated, she was what I'd consider a professional woman. She ran a huge household, managed a number of families, but she couldn't allow any of the other women because their lives would be in danger.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are today with women finally coming around to this. Little did we know, or do we know, and that's what you talk about in your Renaissance book, the role of women. Now, when you go to Greece, you have the Spartans.
Yes.
Now, that was an entirely different environment, a much different environment.
Much different. However, the Greeks feared the Spartan women. And, of course, they had the legends of the Amazons. And they feared women in their power. And so the Spartan women were to be laughed at and to be denigrated. But they exactly. So, but there were the warrior women throughout time, the Spartans, various classes. The Greeks portray the Amazon, but of course the Greek male defeats her, as he does in his god cultures. I mean, even they take over the female role. For example, Athena sprang from the head of Zeus, or Aphrodite sprang from the castrated genitals of a male, certainly equating female sex love with the castration of a male. And that was another reason they wanted, I believe they clothed the female, because they were afraid of her powers, that they might succumb to her, be weakened and tempted by her. So they want, whatever, I'm meandering.
Well, I think when you look at history, and you're able to do what you've done in your book, The Renaissance Woman, you present some facts and information that I found extremely interesting. One was that the wives were supposed to be totally virtuous, and the hetairai, who were considered the courtesans, they were expected to be educated. And these women, these courtesans, had the right to do a lot of things where the wife, the quote-unquote virtuous woman, had no rights whatsoever.
No, they had to protect her to maintain the purity of the male line, because only the wives who were citizens could progenate the Greek citizen male. Now, the courtesans did not have that requirement, because certainly they could birth children, but they were not the progeny. Or their progeny were not the citizens, which would be the political structure in Greece.
Well, it was just fascinating to me, because in the studying of the art, you found a beautiful statue, Dying Niobit,
mm-hmm.
from the baths of Seleucus, and that was the 5th century B.C. And you see, that was one of the first nude sculptures of a woman, and she is exquisitely beautiful.
Isn't she, though?
And who was the artist who did that one?
That is, I'm not sure that we really know the artist of that one. We don't have the artist, actually.
Well, now, with all of this that you discovered, how did this change your mind? What did this do for you? Because you are a counselor. You're working with women. We have women in many different cultures today who are subject to the same kind of a positioning in society, that they have no rights, that they are supposed to be subservient to the male, that they are inferior. I mean, I encounter women today that still believe this. I mean, they've been bought into it. Here we are in 2007, and we still have people that are indoctrinated with this, like this, in the United States, for various cultural reasons, and throughout the world.
Well, certainly, and I myself, I mean, I'm of that baby boomer generation, 1946 birth. And so, certainly, at the time of my rearing, in the family in which I reared, to be female was a most inferior state. In fact, I think I went to medical school trying to prove to my father that I had worth. Of course, it didn't amount to much to him, but I grew up with that that messaging. And part of what's fascinating in doing this research is to realize for the last 3,000 years or 2,500 to 3,000 years, women have been programmed, indoctrinated with this mindset of inferiority. The Greek values went through the Middle Ages. You know, Aristotle resonates forward to the Middle Ages, to the Church Founding Fathers, St. Augustine, onto the Middle Ages and the Renaissance period. Aristotle has been the male mouthpiece, or has been repeated throughout time. What has happened, that mindset and has been incorporated into the laws of our current lifetime. The laws, for example, was fascinating to me. In the Middle Ages and the Renaissance, there was a greater punishment for stealing a man's money than raping a woman. And raping a woman was considered not a crime against the woman, but against her father, husband, brother. And it was an issue of honor. But it was not. But to have raped a woman was of no value except how it reflected on a man. But these laws of the inferiority of women, the belief that women were prone to the darker, more orgiastic, the more sexually deviant behaviors, have been canonized throughout our political system and our religious structures. Certainly, as the Council of Nicaea in 325, when they began to structure Christianity along the male party line and to exclude women either as contributors of any value or as participants in the roles of in Christian life, except, again, mother, caretaker, etc., that this has followed through throughout time. You know, St. Augustine was a devotee of Aristotle, and St. Augustine very much was one of the individuals who helped form the male, the mindset about women in the church canonical gospels. So it's a fascinating reading of how over and over the history of women and their value has been deleted to fit the male supremacy dogma. And of course we're seeing the ultimate of that in Iran and Iraq today. You know, it's still not safe to be an educated woman. It's not safe to show your face. It's not safe to wear clothing that reveals anything about you, including your hair.
Yes, because you're nothing more than a piece of property.
Absolutely.
That's all. That's all you are, is a piece of property. Not all of the men think that way.
No, not at all.
But those that want to manipulate and want to control do that. And what happens, what I find always so interesting, is that the woman is supposed to be the caretaker of the family, you know, according to the modus operandi that's typically expected. You're supposed to be the caretaker, you're supposed to manage everything, you're supposed to do everything, and then you're supposed to be absolutely mindless, brainless, and, you know, you're supposed to fall apart and just disintegrate into dust, and somebody goes, poof! And it's so disgusting to me, because I have seen it so many times demonstrated over the years, and I even think of myself when the indoctrination I received, I always was a rebel in my own way, but so many times I can remember thinking, well, it's just not my place. And you really have to fight against that. And what I think is sad is that until women do become educated, and when I say educated, I mean they have to live some life, but they have to understand, too, that it's their job to pass on this information.
Yeah.
And that's why I so appreciated your book, The Renaissance Woman, because it's important for women to know that being male or female is not the issue here. The issue is the respecting of the rights of a human being, an individual, whether they're male or female.
Exactly.
Of course, I'm up on my little soapbox right now.
Well, that's okay. I'll join you there.
Okay. All right. We'll share the box together. But I have such a passion for this, and it makes me very upset when I actually will talk with women and they'll say, oh, well, you know, I just can't do that because of this belief or that belief. And until they reach a situation where they understand that the beliefs that they have are not their own, that they have been indoctrinated with those beliefs, wow, the turnaround then is phenomenal. It's wonderful. Now, you bring out something I thought was so fascinating, and this is about a German scholar named Albertus Magnus, and he was the teacher of Thomas Aquinas at the University of Paris. I loved what you wrote about this man, because he said that he felt that women experienced greater sexual desire and pleasure than men, and that women, as well as men, were just so very, very much more involved in life. And he just said that there was so much for women, and he was totally ignored. It's only been, in the last 50 years that we've paid attention to this. And he did this when?
This was the time, this is in the Middle Ages. And the Renaissance, I forgot the exact year, I apologize, but he was a student of Thomas Aquinas, but Thomas didn't pay much attention. In fact, he was another devotee of Aristotle's thought. So this was really in the founding formation areas of the church. And I believe this was in the Middle Ages. I don't have total recall because, as I said, I'm not a historian in the book. I'm not an anthropologist. I wish that I could wear all of those hats equally, but I'm just a woman with questions that really went to history and looked at what might have been deleted and entertained a lot of different thoughts. And I'm really glad you brought up the idea. Now, this is not about men versus women. It's about not only the divine feminine within the women or woman herself, but the divine feminine within each and every one of us. Each of us have that male and feminine, masculine and feminine energies within us, and it's really what's happened throughout this last 2,000 years or beyond is this inequality or lack of balance between the masculine and feminine energies, and certainly the aggressive, more intellectual, less intuitive energies that the masculine energy, which, you know, the aggressive, you know, the testosterone surge, et cetera, where we, you know, continue to have wars and try to subjugate people, and nothing is enough, and then we perpetuate greed and power and on and on. And we see that, of course, rife throughout our planet. And versus the balance of the divine feminine of loving nature, respecting and revering all living things, plant, animal, human. And that is the nature of the divine feminine, whether you talk about Mother Earth, the feminine aspects of wisdom, intuition, nurturing, loving, kindness. Those are all feminine attributes. You know, it's just like we've given our God figure, the Christianity, a God figure that's masculine. However, the Holy Spirit is also the Greek Sophia, which is the goddess of wisdom. And so that there was, it's certainly not talked about too much by the fellas, that really is a feminine symbol. And of course the original Trinity probably was a feminine symbol of the virgin, the mature woman who gives birth, and the crone. So it's a very interesting, it was an incredibly interesting journey. Every time I uncovered one stone, there were five more to look under. And so the book really wrote itself. I felt like I was just spiritually led to continue to explore. But really, everything about Renaissance women is about restoring the sacred balance of the masculine and feminine throughout the planet, and to really, you know, ideally lay down the weapons, nurture, love one another. That those of us who are about restoring balance on the planet, be we female or male, to begin to revere every single human being. It's not about money. It's not about stuff we buy with it. It's about a healthy planet and a healthy environment and health between genders and between nations, on and on. And now I'm on my soapbox, but, you know, it's a very wide it has wide manifestations. So I'll let you talk a minute, Donna.
Well, you bring out a point of history, and it is about how we did have matriarchal societies like the Minoan and some others, and you bring that forth. Again, your book, The Renaissance Woman, it's so wonderful because of the history. But there was that cycle. It's as if though there was a peace-loving, though there was harmony, women had all types of positions and responsibilities, much like the women of today do. And then there became that cycle. There were the barbarians, if you will, those that desired the power. And then they came in and slaughtered. And these were people that had truly no real means of defending themselves. So you present the various perspectives throughout history. And I just think that it is so informative. The art in here that you have photographs of are just wonderful.
Okay.
You go through wonderful, wonderful aspects of Hiddleston history relative to some very phenomenal women who made their mark in history.
Oh, yes.
And you go into a lot of very fascinating detail regarding particular religious orientations, what they did, what the laws were. This makes for wonderful reading because it educates us and enables us as women and even for men to read this, I think is important because many times men today go, I don't understand. At one point we had a black and white, which really was just a myth, but that's what they thought was there. And now here we are in this wonderful environment where it should be whether you're male or whether you're female, if you're looking for a job, you should be accepted because of your qualifications, not because of your sex and or your race or anything else. It should be, do you qualify? We have come such a long distance in the factor of human growth. We went backwards for so many centuries, went through the Dark Ages, started to come out, and I like to think that because of the things that you have written, the freedom with which we are able to express ourselves, are being educated and knowledgeable, will enable the Renaissance woman, which has always existed, the Renaissance woman to not just be a few, but to really be many. Because
absolutely,
then a Renaissance really, truly can happen with the men and the women together working as partners.
Absolutely.
And, Linda, your book, Renaissance Woman, I know that it's on your website. Give us your website, please, so people can find out more about you and your publications.
It's www.redearthpublish.com.
That's redearthpublish.com.
Correct.
What words would you like to leave with us? What thoughts before we close out our interview today?
Women throughout time have been Renaissance women. We have incredible gifts and diverse interests and expertise, and our very body is a symbol of rebirth of all humankind. And I find it's, I'm so glad to be a woman in this time, but to be able to look back where we've come, but we have so far to go, and bless all human beings who are willing to entertain the balance of their own feminine and masculine selves.
I agree with that. And I think because of women like you, and I think because of programming like we're able to do here on BBS Radio, it enables us to reach a lot of people that maybe we wouldn't otherwise have a hope or a prayer of being able to communicate with, that education is valuable, to think is valuable, to discover the self is a journey unparalleled with experiences beyond our imagining. My guest today has been Linda S. Bowlby. Her fabulous book is Renaissance Woman. If you have an interest in history, this is awesome. A must read. Donna Sebo here. Linda, thank you for being my guest.
Thank you,
Donna. And this is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't you go away. We've got a lot of good things to share with you. We're going to be right back.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome, welcome. Telephone lines are now open. If you would like to chat with me, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Here are the toll-free numbers to call in to 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. Now, I want to let those of you know, in the state of Washington, I'm going to be doing an appearance, and I'll be doing many consultations at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo, and that is at the Kent Activity Center. And you can go to the Boeing Parapsychology Expo website and get all the information, directions, everything that you need. And I'll be there for the entire day. And that's September the 29th, which is a Saturday. That's going to be a week from tomorrow. Can you believe it? This month has just flown by. So I look forward to meeting those of you that will be attending. And my booth is number 60, booth 60. So come by, say hello. I would love to be able to interact with you. I will be doing many readings while I'm there. And there's going to be so many wonderful things going on. This has been an activity, my goodness, I forget what year it is in now, but they have had this event for years, years and years and years. And it is always well attended. People love it because there's such an openness. There's such a wonderful, wonderful environment of communication. You'll have people who are specialists with rocks and crystals, and you will have people that will be readers like myself or just all kinds of backgrounds and unique individuals. It's a wonderful place. Bring the family. Come on out. September the 29th, the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. You can go to their website, BEPC, Boy Edward Paul Charlie. com, and you'll find out all about that. Also, during the month of October, I am going to be traveling to New York City, Southern California, and also Alaska. And the information is up on my website. Also, you can go in, check my calendar as well as my newsletter for all of the information. My October newsletter, which will be coming out in about a week, will have all of the details as well and the contact information. So I will have limited amounts of time in each of the cities that I'll be visiting, but I still will be available for private consultations if you're interested. And of course, I'll be doing my radio show from wherever I am. The wonders of technology. Well, I wanted to share something with you in the way of information. Sometimes we have vehicles we just absolutely love, but all of a sudden they're going to die on us, and we know we have to go out and get another one. Well, a lot of people in the past were really interested in leasing a vehicle. You were able to turn it over every couple of years after a certain amount of mileage, and it was really quite convenient. And I can remember when I did that 20 years ago, but I did not really find that to be economically as appropriate for me as I had thought it was. And in the 1990s, apparently, car leasing lost a lot of its luster after the 9/11 attacks. And there were a lot of low-interest loans that were being done on automobiles. However, in the mid of the year 2004, interest rates started going up on vehicles. I had a very dear friend who got a vehicle for zero interest. I'll never forget when they drove over to our home and they had this beautiful new vehicle. And we said, wow, this is really something. They said we couldn't go wrong because they were offering 0% interest rate for a certain amount of time on the loan. And they said it was just too good to pass up. So we decided whether we needed a new car or not, we were going to get it. So they did, and they still have that same vehicle. However, sometimes people want to choose to lease rather than to buy a vehicle because their monthly payments might be more manageable. However, leasing has changed, and I came across this information, and I thought you might be interested in it. There's some changes regarding leasing that, well, in some ways it's sort of consumer-friendly, and in other ways it's not. Now, there's $329 a month deals that certain automobile manufacturers are offering. However, when you look past the payment, they only allow 10,000 miles of driving a year. If you go over that, then you've got a challenge. At one time, leasing companies allowed at least 12,000 miles a year. But for so many of us, my goodness, I think of us here in the Northwest, if you just go from Tacoma to Seattle, you put that on, and then some. You could easily put on 25,000 miles a year just commuting around in our area because things are not real close together. So this is a not-so-pleasant pitfall of new leases. And George Hoffer, who is a professor of economics at Virginia Commonwealth University, he has made it his business. He loves to study the auto industry. He said, you need to realize you can become a prisoner of your lease, or you can face higher charges, a higher monthly payment if you take a lease with more miles, or you may end up with steep penalties at the end of a lease. So some of the automakers are requiring a down payment of $2,000 or more on leases, but unlike the down payments on a loan, the lease's capital cost reduction doesn't help build any equity in the car. It's not a down payment, really, but a prepayment of expense. Now, Jack Narad, executive editorial director of Kelly's Blue Books, which, by the way, their website is kbb.com, he said a large down payment reduces the lease's monthly payment but defeats an important lease benefit, driving a new car for little or no cash outlay. Now, this can sometimes be good for some of us who want to end a lease early because we get tired of the car or they want a different vehicle. But it's usually impossible to get out of a lease early without paying a big price. In fact, they often will demand, if you want to leave the lease early, that you pay all the remaining payments on the lease. However, some auto leasing companies have been letting people out of their leases early, especially if it's close to expiring, when you agree to lease a vehicle from them, a newer model, from the same automaker. So for those that want to get out of a lease altogether, there is something that you can do. And I had never heard of this before, and I thought this is a point of education I was very glad to be aware of. You can do a lease transfer. Now, this is something that you can find out more about by going to certain websites. And the websites are lease. Trader.com, leasetrader.com, or swapalease.com, swapalease.com. And these two websites help people transfer their unwanted leases to others that are looking for an attractive short-term lease deal. And often there's no money down on these arrangements. And the specifics of the lease won't be changed, typically. But the leaseholder might offer to make a couple of payments in advance or pay a cash incentive to entice a taker. Now, are there some caveats to this? Well, to protect the original leaseholder from any liability, it's important that his or her name be removed from the lease. Some leasing companies will allow it, others don't. But remember, you're always going to have to pay a fee, either to the website, or I should say both to the website and to the leasing company. So this is something I think that it is good for us to be aware of, because it enables us as individuals to make more effective choices. And this is Donna Sebo. Give me a call if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. If you're in the U.S., if you wanted to call in from Canada, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And if you're a new listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then I'll be glad to give you my insights. And after that, you can ask me a question about anything you desire. I want to let you know who I'm going to have on the air next week. We're going to be talking with Ronald Russell. We'll be talking to him in Scotland. He is the man who has written the story about the journey of Robert Monroe. Robert Monroe is a man who went through so many experiences with astral projection, out-of-body experiences. He decided he was going to research it and study it, and eventually founded an institute that to this day is still doing a lot of research and study. And there are people, when they go through some of the training, many of them are discovering that they are able to be receptive to their own intuitive resources, which they are born with. So the journey of Robert Monroe, this man who started something that has taken on a life of its own relative to education and research, we're going to be learning more about him on Monday. Doreen Benaskazak is going to be with us on Tuesday. Excuse me, your life is now. I love the title. Excuse me, your life is now is a book that follows a wonderful woman's publication who has passed away. Her name was Lynn Grabhorn. And Doreen was a student of Lynn's. And Lynn had published a book, Excuse Me, Your Life is Waiting, which was just wonderful. Lynn was a guest on my show. And I learned about her passing away. And then I found out about Doreen and how she's picked up the baton for Lynn's concepts and thoughts, and has come forth with Excuse Me, Your Life is Now. Then Daryl Hickman, a very famous actor, is going to be our guest next Wednesday. We're going to be talking about his acting process, about his life, how he got to where he is as a specialist in teaching people how to be the best they want to be as actors and actresses. His book is titled The Unconscious Actor, and I'm looking forward to having him as a guest on my show. Then we're going to be talking with Pamela L. Kinney. We're going to be talking about spooks. Yes, haunted Richmond, Virginia is going to be the theme, and I just love it. I just love talking about ghost stories. So we'll be into that a little bit, and then Sail Into Your Dreams with Karen Meringer. This is a woman that believes in the power of the individual and that our dreams can become a reality. A wonderful lineup of guests. And I invite you to tell your friends. Also be aware of the fact that we here at BBS, we archive the shows so you can go and listen to them. If you're busy, you haven't been able to hear them during the day when we're on live, hey, you can go in whenever it's convenient and check it out. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. Telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. I'll be glad to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Just give me a call. We're coming back in just a moment.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are open, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Hello and welcome to the show.
Hello, my name is Dominic and I live in London, in England.
In London. Oh, it's so delightful to chat with you, Thomas.
Dominic.
Let me give you some insights here. One, I'm looking at a deal that you are going to be working on with someone. You're a coordinator. You are so good at bringing people together and matching certain requirements, needs, compatibilities. You really are skilled with this. And I think that in part is because you are extremely intuitive. But I would like to encourage you when you're working on this deal. The negotiation process is going to take you longer than expected, and you need to have some patience here. Also, what I'm observing is that you're not getting a lot of rest. And when I say rest, I mean where you're actually feeling rejuvenated. It's like you're going to sleep and your mind is just as busy when you're asleep as when you are awake. So you would be well advised to consistently, when you are finding yourself getting to that point, I'll call it exhaustion, to have some quiet time. Put yourself into a quiet space that allows you to rejuvenate yourself. If you need to take a nap, fine. If listening to beautiful music does it for you, if painting does it, if a walk around the block with a dog does it, whatever is required, you need to have a break, because I'm looking at so much mental activity, and that can be very, very exhausting. So I want to encourage you to be aware that you really are going to be dealing with more of a stretched out time factor with bringing all of the finer points of connection and interaction with others together. Travel is going to be coming up for you. I think you're really going to enjoy it. But be a little wise here. Don't try to put your agendas, your travel agendas, too tightly together. Because, again, it seems like it wears you out, and it shouldn't. You're not 150 years old, so this shouldn't bother you. But you need that space of quiet. You need your private time. And do keep up your research and your involvement in the psychic area, because I believe that you are developing skills that are going to, within 2 to 3 years, become extremely refined and very, very useful. You'd be a very good remote viewer. Yeah. You have a question for me.
Okay. It's a bit of a difficult one. Okay. I have a spirit friend. She's a spirit. But she told me once that she's just stage trained. And then last year, she told me she'd done some film work. And I think she probably passed on in the 1970s. And then later last year, I saw somebody on a 1950s science fiction TV show who looked exactly like her, sounded exactly like her, and I believe it's her.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just wondering how realistic it is for me to make such an assumption, because all my communications are very subjective.
Well, I think with this energy that you've been talking with, she sees you as someone that she can communicate with. And what you are experiencing in seeing this other personality that is, almost identical to her, believe it or not, it's not that uncommon to find that. And I think that the person that you have been in communication with is wanting to bring your attention to what I would call the parallel universe theory. And what you are seeing, if you were to actually meet this individual, it's not your friend.
Okay.
It's not your friend. But what you are seeing is the harmonics that can be in another individual. You, I'm sure, are aware of twins and how there can be that particular bonding that nobody, science keeps researching and can't figure out. But they are often able to, even if they're separated at birth, they have the same patternings, they have the same loves of food, even if they've never met each other, there's that communication. And there are sometimes, and actually more frequently than what we realize, those persons that can be like a mirror reflection of someone else.
I see. Okay. Well, that's a fair enough answer. Well, thank you much indeed.
Well, I hope that has helped you.
Yeah. Well, it's a funny situation. You're like, it's spoken to my own for 20 years, but you say, I can't, she'll tell me that she was this person. And then basically, obviously, it's subjective about all of my communication with her. It's entirely subjective. But, that's a fair enough answer. It's just, it's still going to confuse me a lot still.
Well, what I'd like for you to do is keep your notes on this. And when you have a chance, don't hesitate to challenge the person that's communicating with you.
Yeah, so one of the things, it's like I could cross-examine her any time. I will ask her anything I want, but it's like only so much is going to come back to me. If I try to get my ego in and, challenge her over something, I just basically have to release that desire and just go with the flow.
Well, I believe that you're evolving gradually into a whole new level of understanding.
Yeah.
And this is not always easy to make the adjustment, because when we make the adjustment, sometimes we are going to be leaving certain things behind. And so I think it's good for you to challenge. And don't worry about the ego. Just ask the question.
I probably get all the answers coming back at me saying that she is or this person, but it just so happened that that actress, she kind of faded out of fame at the same time, but she disappeared out of all, I can't find any information about her at all in there. This is very puzzling, and she stopped being famous at the same time as my other dimensional friends seem to cross over.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's all very perplexing.
Well, I think what you have is a parallel situation.
Parallel
situation, which happens.
Okay.
And
well,
Thomas, I regret I'm going to have to go because I'm out of time.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
You're very welcome, my friend, and I appreciate your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to have to say goodbye because, my goodness, we're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take care. God bless. I'll talk with you right here, same time, same place, here on BBSRadio.com on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.